welcome along to the Design Ops podcast for what is the second episode. And I'm super chuffed to have my next guest. I've been following you for a long, long time. I've picked up a lot from you over the years, not just around design systems, a whole ton of stuff, which we'll touch on in a minute. But Dan Mull, welcome.
Sean, thank you. Thank you for having me here. It's a pleasure. Excited to chat with you.
Awesome. Thank you. I've reached out to a couple of people that I've followed over the years. This is a brand new podcast, you know, currently with zero audience. So thank you, first of all, for coming on with not much incentive of an audience to speak to right now, but I'm hoping I can hit the ground running with good guests like yourself.
Yeah, that's
very
awesome.
Quickly we can build something together. So I think I first discovered you way back in, it's not that long ago, actually, really. So probably 2011, 2012, you spoke at New Adventures in Nottingham.
Yeah, that's right. Colleagues Conference, yes.
That's right, yeah. I think you were at the time at Big Spaceship, but very soon after you set up Super Friendly.
That's right, yeah.
Early on, you were talking a whole lot about value-based pricing, which I was super interested in at the time because, you know, I was pulling my hair out trying to get 500 quid out of somebody for a little website. And, you know, the money on the table was completely different in the value-based pricing world. And your Super Friendly site was a great example for me anyway of how to talk about and how to sell design from that perspective. So thank you for that.
Yeah, awesome.
I think much of your work then, I think, because I've followed you over the years, and obviously you've done a lot of work with Brad Frost, and Brad's known for coming up with the idea of this atomic design systems. But I think certainly you two together have been fundamental for me in terms of design systems. I think much of your work started leaning towards more design systems. So, and now, I mean, 10 years later, you've wrapped up Super Friendly. What are you doing now? What have you gone on to?
You know, I'm not sure. Mostly being fun employed for a bit. And that's not entirely accurate. I'm mostly trying things. So I've got a lot of things. I've got some consulting going. I've got a couple of products that I'm trying to make. I'm trying not to use the word content creator because it's odd and weird. And it makes me feel like, I don't know, there are younger people around. but I realized that I really enjoy teaching. That was the thing that's the running thread through all of my client work is I like the stuff where I get to teach clients or teach my team members. And I think I have enough experience that's worth sharing for some folks. And I enjoy doing that. I get a lot of it. I think they get a lot of it. So just figuring out different avenues and different channels for me to be able to do that.
I'm always interested, actually, when somebody runs successfully at something for a while and then they pivot and go and do something completely different. And there's often a question mark for me as to why. But I think absolutely, you know, you can see from the content you've put out recently, there's a learning focus and, you know, you speak at a lot of conferences. And actually, you had a product on your Super Friendly site that I used to sell. I hope you still sell it. The design system in 90 days workbook.
Yeah, that's right.
Those sort of tools are useful for people trying to get into this because I think design systems is such a broad thing, right? I mean, people might fire up Figma and draw a couple of components, and to them, that's their design system. And then on the flip side, you've also got, big, cumbersome things that nobody wants to go anywhere near. So I think I'd like to hear from you. What, from your perspective, what is a design system?
Yeah, that's a tough one. Because I think both words are problematic. The word design could mean a lot of things and the word system can mean a lot of things. So you put them together and then they mean even more things than that. I think broadly, and I kind of pendulum swing back and forth between, I have had the opinion at certain times that like, if it's not in code, it's not a design system. And then I pendulum swing to the other side. There's basically any way or methodology that you have of designing, which is rendering some sort of intent. Yeah, that's a design system, right? So like I kind of go back and forth between the two of those. One of the things that I'm starting to teach a lot lately is I've tried to identify the different kinds of design systems. So broadly, a design system is any way of systematizing the way that you're delivering, you know, value to someone or delivering an intent to someone. And then there are different kinds of those things. A UI kit is a way of doing that. You know, a component library is a way of doing that. A methodology is a way of doing that. a software product that is NPM managed. And, you know, that's a way of doing that. So I've tried to identify a visual identity system is a type of design system because it's a way of doing that. So I've tried to kind of categorize. I think I've come up with 5 or 6 different categories of design systems. And the one that I, and then that way it allows me and allows people to go like, oh, this is the one that we're talking about. You know, from now on, we're talking about this kind, or we're talking about this combination of design systems. And I find that to be helpful vocabulary now to go like, we get that all of those things are design systems. We don't want to gatekeep and say that one is and this one's not. But for our purposes, for our team or our organization, we're really talking about a software product that's NPM managed, that's version controlled, that has a budget and a team dedicated to it. Now that we're on the same page about that, now we can have productive conversations because we're all aligned. So that's kind of where I've landed lately. I'm sure it'll change and it'll evolve as I'm learning more things about design systems, but that's kind of where I've landed lately is a design system is any way of doing, you know, rendering intent. Which way are we talking about? Are we talking about software products? Are we talking about design UI kits? Are we talking about component libraries and code? And now we're delivering on one of the promises of design systems, which is shared vocabulary and common language.
Yeah, I think that's the key thing, right? It's, you touched on it there. I think it's the design system is what that team need it to be.
Totally. Yes.
I saw you speak very recently at Converge Conf, the Zero Height Conference, I think back in September. And you'll talk about, you know, what's your next component? And, you know, instead of starting the design system with the typical button, you know, how can we probably take a much more complete component or a more complex component? And in your example, you spoke about like Uber's map component, right? Mm-hmm. Can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, I've worked with a lot of design system teams, and they start with what is seemingly the most obvious thing, which is like a design system is the, you know, is the all the basics that you need, right? So let's start with the basics. Let's start with typography and grids and layout and buttons and cards and headers and footers. And what I've seen, what I've learned in that is I've worked with so many teams that start that way, and then they make all these amazing basics. You know, all these, and they call them foundations often, which I have a big problem with that word. You know, we can get into that too. And they make all these foundations, and they are objectively excellent. They're well coded. They are well designed. They're expedient. They're efficient. You know, because they've been designed for that purpose. And it's like, cool, this is great. And then they try to get people to use them, and then no one uses them. And then they go, but I mean, our stuff is really good, and they're not wrong. You know, so to me, I'm like, well, the point of a design system is to use it, you know, not to make it, not to have it. It's to be used. And so what I've learned is that that's actually a bad starting point is when it's trying to make a bunch of things and then finding customers or users or people that will use that. And if one of the things that is common in the world of design systems is saying design systems are a product. Well, so who makes products? Startups. And what do startups do? Startups don't just make a thing and then try to find people to use it. They usually are trying to serve a need, right? And they go, okay, we have identified this need in the world or in a particular market, and now we can make a product that caters specifically to that need. And oftentimes those needs are not very basic. You know, those needs are something that are very hyper-specialized. And as I've worked with more teams and encouraged them to start thinking about it that way, that's found more traction in usage. Almost no one needs button, you know, needs someone else to solve button for them. You know, the most design teams or even designers working at a startup or a product company or a big enterprise, they're not like, oh, we can't do our work because we can't design button on our own. Like that, yeah. I've never heard that as a problem. Instead, they're like, you know, this autocomplete component is very complex and we just don't have the time to build it in a really good way that even we could reuse it later on. So we're just going to hack it together. Well, that's a need. That's a thing that a design system team who has that intention to go, let's design a thing in an efficient way, in a way that allows it to scale. You know, we can make that for a team. Like we can make that because we're not working on anything else. That team has other things they have to do. So as I've worked with teams, I've suggested to them, like, don't worry about the basics. Worry about the need, the most common need right now. You know, and if you look at it that way, it's almost never button, it's almost never card, it's almost never header. It's usually something very specific, very specialized. It's, you know, inline alert that needs to sit on a dashboard. You know, it's something really hyper focused like that. And then if you can make that for these teams, then these teams start to go like, that design system team, they are really helpful. Like, what else can we use them for? And I think that's a good entry point.
It sounds like it's less starting with a design system and just starting, right? And then coming back later to say, okay, right, what's useful here? What's reusable, right?
Yes, I love it. The we always talk about this virtuous cycle at digital organizations where like design system feeds the product and the product feeds the design system, and that's a cycle. The problem with cycles is that people don't know where they start, right? So Absolutely. Where do they, you know, it's a 50-50, it's a coin toss. You know, do we start with the design system or do we start with product? And everybody picks design system and they're wrong. You pick the wrong one. Start with products. And then once you make a product, you can pull stuff out of the product to start making and growing a system, you know, but everybody starts with design system and then they're puzzled when product doesn't know how to integrate the system.
Right. I heard recently on another podcast, another design ops podcast, it's almost like design ops is the new buzzword, but I heard you're a certified Scrum Master. Is that right?
It's true. I don't know if my certification needs to be renewed or something because it's a couple years old now.
Right,
but
okay.
Yes, at one point I was a certified Scrum Master. Yes.
Awesome. That's interesting. A designer in that role.
Well, because it's, to me, it's crucial to the role. Yeah, it's like, you know, it's like designers who don't understand anything about code, but are supposed to make websites. You know,
right.
you can do it, but you're missing a whole bunch of context. So for me, like I wanted to lean more into products and how product gets made and work with product managers and product owners more closely. And I was like, I just don't understand anything about that world. So I was like, might as well get certified. So I took a course and I got certified.
Awesome. Maybe that's something I should do. I do have frustrations around agile ways of working and how design fits into that. And actually, I've heard you talk about recently around this idea of the hot potato, tossing this thing around between design and engineering. It's something I struggle with. I think you can expect some level of design output as part of a discovery and definition phase, maybe a 30,000 foot view or something, or maybe a handful of components to get you started. But the struggle for me is then when you head into the engineering sprints, right, and you're starting to build the thing, and it's where I get the most friction, I think. And I think, you know, you have a design team working on how this thing might work, and that could take three or four weeks. But for engineering to implement that thing could be done in maybe an afternoon. So you're starting to get a misalignment of, you know, if you're working in these sort of 2 week sprints or whatever that time might be. You know, and it works vice versa, right? Something that could be designed in an hour or two could take weeks of work, some months of
That's
work.
Right.
I struggle there. I think sometimes that maybe design could work in its own sprint run, almost kind of adjacent to the engineering sprints, but separate from. But then to me, that kind of moves away from what agile is, and you're not then working on the same thing at the same time. So yeah, that's what I struggle with that quite a bit.
Yeah, the running theme through my work over many years, even though it touches different topics, like it's design systems now, before it used to be design process, before then, you know, responsive design and mobile first and web standard, like all of those. The thing that I've always been interested in is culture. And you know, I didn't know that at the time. I think I'm only starting to realize that now. But to me, if we don't change the culture of how we work, we're not going to make good things. You know, it's not going to be fun for anybody. It's not going to be useful for anyone. And to me, when I've worked on successful projects, they've always been collaborations. You know, very rarely has it been like that person does that thing and then that person does that thing later. And then magically it all came together, you know, perfectly. And so to me, the more separate people are, the more problematic the work becomes. I think the inverse is true too. You jam them all together, the work becomes maybe a little bit messier, but I think more cohesive, you know, and maybe the process is messier, but I'm like, that's design. I think, you know, it's like, it's messy. It's not linear. Or it's not always linear, I should say. And so where I've found a lot of success is in just jamming people together, you know, and going like, let's do a thing. And like, let's normalize the fact that it can be messy. It's okay for it to be messy, you know, because what comes with the mess sometimes is high energy, sometimes surprise, sometimes innovation. Like innovation comes out of messes sometimes. And so if we try to be too efficient about those messes or about, you know, being too cleanly about it, you know, we miss a lot of stuff. We leave a lot of stuff on the table. And so, you know, for me, I'm like, and I've been lucky to work at places and work on things where the initial idea came out of an engineer prototyping something. So why do we have this false notion of like, well, design has to start everything, or strategy has to start everything, and then design, you know, and then design goes, and then engineering goes. And I just found a lot of problems that related to that particular sequence. And another thing that I found in that is that I think I'm believing less and less in phases, that like there's a discovery right. phase, and then there's a design phase. I mean, it's all design. It's all discovery. Like, you mean to tell me that there's a point where we stop discovering things? Like, that's foolishness. You know, like, no, yeah. no way. Sometimes we discover something on the last day before you're supposed to ship something. Do we ignore that? You know, like, and the default answer is, well, yes, we ignore that until next sprint. And I'm like, well, what would it look like if we didn't ignore that? What would it look like if we integrated it right now? And just embracing the idea that like anything can flow in at any time when you have it. When you can build, the earliest you can start building, build. The earliest you can start designing, design. The earliest you can start strategizing, discovering, researching. Like, all of those things I think should be constant and consistent. And I've found, even though it's messier, I find a lot of good success in that. And that, you know, that's why earlier you're saying about, you know, being a scrum master, that's why I wanted to learn more about that, was like, how do people normally do this?
Right.
And what are the accepted ways to do this? And then what things can change, and what things are principles that persist through different ways to do this, and what things are really about rituals? What are the differences between waterfall and scrum and agile and XP and Kanban and, you know, all those kinds of things? And how can we take the best of all of those things and kind of mash them together?
Yeah. Well, that's true agile, right? It's being
exactly.
nimble on your feet and adjusting. It's yeah. Yeah, one of the things you mentioned there around, you know, just jumping in and a designers and engineers just starting working together. And sometimes those things come out of just starting that thing. It can be quite tricky agency side, because I work primarily for an agency. We talk about lean, fail fast and that kind of stuff. But actually, in reality, we're always celebrating the quick turnaround. And we did this thing in 2 weeks, and we did this thing. And actually, there's not so much room for the failing anymore, I don't feel. And actually, that's where the magic comes from, is fail a few times, right? Celebrate that, right. those fails. I just feel that lacks somewhat, certainly, in what I've seen recently in agency world.
Well, it's because we're disincentivized to fail, right? Because this is why, even though as a designer, I'm like, I'm going to write a book about pricing. Because as I looked at our incentives, you know, from an agency or a client service standpoint, I'm like, we're disincentivized to do that if we're paid by the hour. If we're paid by the hour, well, why fail? You know, if we're paid by like by deliverable, even by milestone, well, then, you know, then we don't need to do those kinds of things. Because a client won't pay for failure if they're paying for the other. They'll go like, well, I don't want to pay for that. That hour, because I didn't get something that is valuable to me. And you're like, I mean, but you did.
Absolutely.
But just in a roundabout way, yeah. you know, but and then you have to spend the time convincing them about that. So our incentives are all wrong about that kind of failure. And that's why I'm like, we have to unpack our incentives and change the culture of our work before we're even allowed to fail. Otherwise, No, don't fail. There's too much risk in that. The client won't pay us. I might get fired. People will look at me poorly. You know, they'll think I'm not professional. You know, all of those things are the things that disincentivize us from failing. So, you know, at Superfriendly, one of the things that we had put in our onboarding is I have a section in our onboarding that basically said, here are the types of failure that exist. Here's the one that we don't want you to do. Here's the one that is just not allowed here. All of the other ones are fine. No penalty will come to you. And in fact, 4 or 5 of these, we actually encourage you to do, right? And it comes from Harvard Business School. Our Harvard Business Review has an article about the types of failure. And there's lots of different ways to fail. The one failure that we didn't tolerate was not trying, right? So that if you won't even attempt something, well, that is not something that we can work with. So if you're the kind of person who's just not going to attempt it, I'm not sure that you have a place here. Other kinds of failures, you know, there are, you know, experimentation is a type of failure. Like, by all means, experiment, do an iteration on something that you're not sure will work. If it, you know, if it flops, that's fine. The client's not going to pay us any less. We'll just extend the time frame. You're paid well enough that's not going to make a difference. Like so all, like, we're trying to remove the incentives, you know, the disincentives to not fail, you know, and instead encourage to go like, yeah, you want to try something, go for it. You know, you want to to try two different things at the same time, well, great. You have the time to do that. You have the liberty to do that. And I think that those are the kinds of things that need to change first before we can say, all right, designers and engineers, like, get in a room and do whatever. Because if you don't change the culture, then they're like, wait, why am I, like, this is scary now. Like, what am I allowed to do? If I do this poorly, like, am I going to get fired? Am I going to get reprimanded? Or are my colleagues going to look at me differently? You know, all of those things have to change before we can have a culture of failure being okay.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it makes sense to fail a few times for a few thousand dollars each time versus a few hundred thousand dollars, right?
Exactly. Yep. You know? And once you get that under your belt, then you feel fine if you know that it will all be okay, right? So I think that you need those reps under you. I think you need to be able to go, like, I just failed, you know, it cost a couple thousand dollars. Is that okay? You know, you're sort of looking around and everybody's like, yeah, it's fine. Okay, well, then I just failed, you know, with a couple hundred thousand dollars on the line, you know, is that okay? And everybody, yeah, it's fine. Because you have confidence that, like, yeah, but that failure for $100,000 actually makes us $1 million later. You know, if you know that that's the potential at the end of the tunnel, you know, then I think it's okay. I think that's why I'm such a big proponent of, if you price well, you know, because one of the things about pricing is that, you know, reward comes with risk. You know, the risk, when you take on risk, that brings a potential of reward. If you never take on risk, the reward will be limited. So there's got to be some amount of risk that is tolerable and in fact encouraged in order for people to do good work and important work.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's why value-based pricing resonated with me so early on, because you're starting to think less about the deliverable of a website or an app or a thing, and more about, you know, what's that thing for, right? And what value it provides.
I think a lot of people think value-based pricing is about making the most money possible, and it's not. It's not about that. It's about creating the most value possible, and a byproduct of that is you will likely make more money for everyone involved. Your client will make more money. You will make more money. Your client's customers will make more money. You know, and money is just one example of an output. It might be, you know, there's all sorts of kinds of value. It's not just currency. It is, or it's not just financial. You know, it's friendliness. It's speed. It's confidence. It's, you know, all of those things are kinds of value. So the more that you can increase value as a service provider or as a designer or an engineer or something like that, you're creating value for everyone involved. And that, you know, that is what the focus is on in value-based price, not how many hours did this take.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's where people get hung up, right? It's sort of, you know, you've spent this long, and, you know, it's a tricky one. Okay, well, thank you very much, Dan. I'm very conscious about keeping these episodes short and sweet and to the point. I did joke yesterday with Paul Boag. I don't know if you ever remembered back to it. He had a 100th live episode where it was live in some offices somewhere. And we joked yesterday, because he's currently going around the US in an RV. And we joked that we'll hook up in some a parking lot in Vegas for our 100th like episode. It. So we'll invite you along to that, right?
A parking lot in Vegas could mean a lot of things. So,
well, like, this is the thing. We did discuss a few things of what that might look like. But yeah, that's cool. Obviously, we're new. We're yet to build our audience. So I want to give you the opportunity to sort of tell us about, you know, what you're doing, what you're doing next. Anything you want to share with us that might be of interest to us?
Yeah, I appreciate that. So I'm mostly just trying to share my thoughts and experience as much as I can. I'm writing a lot more on my website, danmall.com. I write shorter snippets on Twitter until that's not a thing anymore. So Dan Mall on Twitter. And then I'm also trying a bunch of other different formats that are a bit newer to me. So more video, more audio, more carousels, more things like that. So Instagram and YouTube, you know, I'm Dan Mall Teaches on both of those platforms. So mostly I'm just trying to share my content in ways that are helpful to people in the ways that they learn. So not everybody learns by reading, not everybody learns by watching, mostly just trying to figure out how it gets to all of those things. So those are all places to find me. Hope one of those things is actually resonates.
And I will also add to the show notes a link to your design system in 90 days workshop.
Fantastic.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for your time, Dan. I know you're super busy, and hopefully with guests like yourself, I can hit the ground running and build my audience quickly.
Love it. Yeah.
So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Sean. I appreciate it. We'll